Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. It is Thursday, March 14th, and racing is in full swing here in northeast of the United States. We had Lincoln, we had Sealands Grove, and they're going to be back in action this weekend. And coming up in just 2 short weeks, we're going to be having the season opener practice day at Grandview Speedway. We got a lot going on tonight. We're going to be replaying an interview that Vince did with Jeff Burton and Sam Hornish. But first up, we got some news going on. Denny says he's still not going to pay his fine. That's right. Denny Hamlin says, I'm still not going to pay, but I'm also not going to appeal. But NASCAR says, that's all right, Denny. Don't worry about it because we have another rule in the rule book. So we're just going to go to use Section 12.3 of the rule book, which says that under that rule, NASCAR can garnish a driver's purse money or points fund bonus. And NASCAR also says it considers this matter closed. So Kerry Tharp was saying that there was a dialogue between Denny and NASCAR during the week, and this was in the resolution that came about. They're looking forward to putting this behind them, but obviously that means Denny's not paying, but he still is paying because, Denny, they're taking it out of your paychecks you get from the track. So, I don't know. I'm going to assume that Gibbs is supporting him in this for not paying the fine because they're not appealing it, and they didn't do anything quite yet about him having his payments garnished. So we shall see how this happens. I do think it's great for Denny to stand his ground. I understand that, you know, everybody has the right to say what they want to say. And again, you know, when you get upset, you're going to say things. But all he did was compare two cars. Be like saying you like a Ford over a Chevy. I don't see a problem with that. Anybody else wouldn't see a problem with that, but because you said you like the Gen 5 car over the Gen 6 car, well, NASCAR has a problem with that. But seems like they've had a lot of problems with things a lot of people are saying lately, so who knows? But as with anything, it gets some publicity. Everybody's talking about it. Everybody wants to know what's going on. Maybe it's another plan by NASCAR to help drum up some ratings this year and get the interest back into the sport, which is something that seems like it's been lacking over the past couple of years. Now, Jeff Burton did support him and say he thought NASCAR had overreacted. You know, so he's got some support. Jeff Gordon, not sure, doesn't... Let's see, Jeff Gordon, when they were out in Vegas, he said, we are in Vegas, so we can try to count the odds of when the apology is going to be coming out and when we're all in this together to grow the sport tweet is going to be coming. Your guess is as good as mine, Gordon said. So everybody has mixed opinions on this. Personally, I'm sorry. Speak your mind. Everybody has the right to say what they want to say. If he was more comfortable and he liked the other car better, so be it. That's his decision. It's not like we're going back to the other car. He has no choice. He has to drive this car. So that's not changing. So in time, he's either going to learn how to adapt and like it, or he's just going to learn how to adapt and deal with the fact that he's driving this car. I think NASCAR's overreacting, but it is what it is, and nothing we can do to change our mind at this point. We got a report coming out. Forbes is saying that Hendrick Motorsports is still NASCAR's most valuable team, has a value of $357 million. Which has increased 2% since last year. Hendrick is worth twice as much as second-ranked Joe Gibbs Racing, and he is the only four-car sprint team left in NASCAR and brings in $125 million a year in sponsor revenue. Now, it sounds like a lot of money, but when you think about it, you got four cars that you're footing the bill for, $125 million. You know, you got to pay your driver's salaries and everything like that. And when total earnings of $25.9 million of that go to Dale Earnhardt Jr., if you have to split that amount out just between your drivers, well, guess what? Not going to have enough money to pay your drivers and pay for all your expenses and race entries and everything like that. So $125 million sounds like a lot, but it really isn't that much. And we all know Lowe's already extended their deal through 2015 as a primary sponsor in Jimmy Johnson's car. Earnhardt Ganassi was ranked number 8th with a value of $72 million, announcing that this week they're going to be switching engine suppliers from Earnhardt Childress Racing to Hendrick starting in 2013. So there's some more income coming into Hendrick because they're going to be getting some motor money from them. So lots going on in that team. Now, Roush Fenway's value, or Roush, They've dropped 10%. They're down to $166 million for their team value. They've been having problems getting sponsors. You know, they lost Kansas to Gibbs, who won this past weekend. You know, so, you know, another one that's taking a loss right now is Richard Childress Racing. They're number four in the list, but they're down 6%. They're down to value of only $139 million. And, you know, they're losing their driver at the end of this year, 2014. Kevin Harvick is going to Stewart Haas Racing. And they don't know if Budweiser's going with them or not. But Stewart Haas Racing, on the other hand, they've gone up 14% to $123 million, and they're ranking fifth. So, you know, Tony and Gene are starting their way to start building one of their top teams. But, you know, it's a lot of money. It takes a lot to get out there in the sport. So don't think it's easy to get out there and do this stuff. So you see them getting a lot of money, but what they do, you know, they're driving 500 miles some weekends. They got a lot of things they got to take care of, a lot of expenses. They got appearances and getting to and from the tracks. We all know some of them have nice homes and everything like that, but they still got to be able to get around. And we all know how much gas is, and if you're flying here and there and everywhere, and some of them track jumping to get to different events on the weekend so they can run multiple races, which has slimmed down a lot. I give credit to NASCAR for that, for cutting them out of being able to run in more than one point series. But, yeah, they still get paid a lot. Can't deny that fact. And, you know, and Dale Jr., obviously the highest paid driver in the sport for the fifth straight year, $25.9 million. You know, they're saying that he earned about $12.9 million between salary and prize money. And then the rest is from endorsements and things like that. Wow, lots going on. You know, it just amazes me how much these people make. But now we're Pennsylvania. Buzzy Rudiman, Days of Reading. Got to give a shout-out to David Rudiman. He's going to have his 200th start in the Sprint Cup Series Sunday at Bristol Motor Speedway. So congrats out to them. He's going to be driving in the number zero State Fair Corn Dog Chevy for Michael Waltrip. He made his debut at Charlotte in October 2005, and glad to see him up there and hanging with the big boys. Allmendinger's coming back to racing. He is had a successful outing with the number 51 team at Phoenix International Raceway. He is going to be again with them at Bristol for the Food City 500. He's going to have the Guy Roofing Chevrolet in his second Sprint Car Cup Series of 2013. They're going to be running a race to another place at the Subway Fresh Fit 500 2 weeks ago. And, you know, some other news that was coming out about him is that he's going to be driving Penske IndyCar. So he's going to be IZOD Series IndyCar program in 2013. He's going to be out there competing. He's going to be in the number two IZOD team, Penske Dallara Chevrolet, at the Indy 500. So the odds of him seeing him in the Coke 600 is really slim at this point, obviously. So I want to wish him the best of luck getting back into the racing, getting everything back on track. Now, the rumor is right now Sunday's flyover could have been the last two. Sunday's military flyover before the Cobalt Tools 400 might have been the last flyover at a NASCAR race, with $85 billion in federal budget cuts possibly going to effect soon. Flyovers would be grounded by the government's sequestration process, which includes about 30% military budget cuts. Thunderbirds are expected to stand down effective April 1st. So, kind of sad. I've always enjoyed the flyovers, always look forward to it. It's one of the neatest things going on. But if it is, it is. You know, everybody's got to cut corners nowadays, so there we go. And I want to give a shout-out to Fastlane Racing. They are working on a new sponsorship. They signed a 3-year sponsorship agreement with OxyWater, which is the ultimate healthy hydration beverage. It's going to be the primary sponsor of the number 32 Fastlane Racing Ford for 24 NASCAR Sprint Cup races this season, and will continue for the entire 2014 and 2015 seasons. It will debut this weekend at the Food City 500 with 2-time NASCAR Sprint Cup champion Terry Labonte behind the wheel. It's OxyWater is a dynamic young company that features oxygen-enhanced mineral water. So congratulations to them on landing a new sponsor. It's great to see that team being able to progress a little bit. And, you know, it just shows hard work and patience pays off. And glad to see everything's going well for them. But I know you're all waiting for this, so let's get to it. Vince had some special guests this past Monday night, and want to make sure everybody had a chance to hear them. And so we're going to make sure you get that chance right now. He had none other than Jeff Burton and Sam Hornish on the phone this past Monday night. It was a great show. I hope you all had a chance to tune in. But if not, we are going to give you the chance to tune in right now. So we will be back after the music with their show. So hold on, and we'll be right back.
We'll be right back. He's going to be making an appearance in Bluefield, Virginia at the Ollie's Bargain Stores for their grand opening this Wednesday, March 11th. So if you get down there early and you're in the Bluefield area, they're giving away tickets to get an autograph. It's one per customer, and the line starts forming at 7:30 a.m. Jeff should be there around 10. If I could drag my butt out of bed, maybe I'll get down there and tell Jeff I said hi. So anyway, we'll have a little wrap-up on the race. Take your calls. Talk to Sam Hornish. Right now, let's listen to what Jeff, how's it going today?
It's going well. How are you?
Well, not too bad. Trying to lose some of this weather here. It's raining in southwestern Virginia. Fortunately, I guess, I don't know whether you're back at home or still out in the Phoenix area, but try to stay out west in the dry area as long as possible.
I'm in the rain with you.
Well, hopefully if further south enough for us to get 1 to 3 inches of snow in this area, and worse further north you go. So hopefully you just get the rain.
Yeah, I'm going to south. I don't know what's that's sure.
Your home area is probably going to get hammered today, but yeah, that's the way it goes in this neck of the woods. Nice top 10th place to 10th place run at Phoenix. Daytona wasn't so good. The new Generation 6 cars that everybody's trying to get the hang of these days. How do you like it, or is it too early to tell yet?
Well, I think, you know, Daytona was, you know, I wouldn't feel, you know, okay, you know, I just say I thought Daytona was a great race. It was, you know, a race you will tune in to watch single file race and then the Super Speedway race. And, you know, it didn't work out very well there, but yeah, you know, I know Phoenix was a really good race. Had a lot of things going on there. A lot of different people had a chance to win, and I think Vegas would be a good race. You know, this car was built to improve the racing on the mile and a half racetracks, and I think you're going to see that. I really do. I think that the concept's correct. I think you know, making the cars have more downforce on them will ultimately make better racing. So you know, I believe it's the right thing to do. But, you know, time will tell. But I'm a believer that we're heading in the right direction.
Yeah, I think so, too. I mean, when they first came out with the COT car a few years back, it was kind of ugly, the big wing. Didn't kind of look right. Now they're trying to get more towards the, I guess, the street version that you see on the showroom floors.
Yeah, and really, I mean, honestly, if you've seen a Chevrolet SS sitting right next to a race car, they look the same. And I think that's important. You know, the we got away from that, and for years, not just with the COT, but even prior to that, we got away from, you know, a Ford looking like a Ford, a Chevy looking like a Chevy, and, you know, my Chevy SS looks like the Chevy SS that you would see on the street, and that's what we should have. I mean, our sports should be, you know, the rivalries are important, you know, connection to the street car you drive at home is important, and we lost that for not just the COT, but way before that, we lost it, and it's good to have it back.
Well, that was the whole thing, I guess, with the aerodynamics and getting to be able to, with the restrictor plate, I guess it was the birth of the getting away from that. So the manufacturers and the teams were trying to get every aero edge they could. And then when they decided to come out with the COT for safety reasons, it kind of drifted further away. So hopefully now they got the safety features worked into the car.
That's right.
And I guess the next issue of safety concern would be grandstands at Daytona Nationwide race. Kyle Larson's car getting airborne into the catch fence. Of course, the fence doing its job and keeping the car and most of the car out of the stands. Just that tire that went over the thing and hurt a bunch of people. Fortunately, everybody's going to make it. But still, you know, is there anything that you feel that they can do to help that?
I mean, NASCAR deserves a lot of credit for the things that they have done. You know, the fencing isn't up there without fault. The fencing has had a tremendous amount of work done with it from an engineering standpoint, from a design standpoint, through the experiences that we've had as a sport, trying to look past those experiences to them and say what else can happen. Obviously, we need to look at it and find a better way to do it. But, you know, it's when I look at what NASCAR has done over the last decade, they've put a tremendous amount of effort into safety, not just for the drivers, but for the spectators as well. And the tracks have spent an enormous amount of money implementing those changes. So it's in no way am I defending saying that it's as good as it can be, because it's not. Obviously, that we got to do some things better. But I think the tracks and NASCAR deserve a lot of credit for what they've done to make it as safe as it is. And, you know, without those things, go back and think about Carl Edwards' wreck at Talladega. You know, this wreck here, more people could have been injured and or even worse. So we've got to look at it. We've got to, you know, safety's not, same thing with safety is it's not a goal. You know, you're never going to reach the end. You're never going to find the checkered flag with safety. You got to continue to be innovative. You got to continue to be putting money and research and effort into it. And, you know, to NASCAR's better, I feel like you've done that. So, you know, they'll learn from this and be better. And, you know, it's a terrible incident for sure, you know, for everybody involved. You know, I spoke to some of the drivers that night. They were just horrified, really heartbroken about what had happened. And you know, really, really, really were having a tough time dealing with it. So it's just, it was a really, really bad thing. But, we got to find a way to do better. But I just think it's important to note that they've worked really hard trying to make it the best they can make.
And the thing of it is, too, this back in 1987, Bobby Allison got his car up into the catch fence at Talladega, which brought about the restrictor plate racing to basically lower the speed. So it's not something that, you know, you can actually figure out how to prevent stuff like that from happening, especially when you're bunched together for 200 laps at 195 miles an hour on up. If somebody makes a mistake, is what happened in that one. It's just the way the car hits another car that gets it up in the air. And, you know, there's only so much they could do. I mean, you hear talk about taller fences, but, you know, it can only go so high before you start to lose the rigidity of
there's obviously some engineering concerns. And well, it's easy to say, well, just do this, but then when you just do this, they have, you know, there's consequences of that. You know, you don't, a reaction has an equal and opposite reaction, so you have to really think about what you're doing and make sure you're doing the right thing. And trying to make one thing better, sometimes you make other things worse.
And you know, that's one of the things that, like you said, is a never-ending project. So just to keep, you're never going to have what you would consider the ultimate experience at a race, to where nothing happens. And when you'd like to see that, but, you know, the human element of it is going to create something, and you just hope it's pretty much kept to a minimum.
Sure.
And let's see. And you're going to be making an appearance up this way Wednesday the 13th. You're going to be in Bluefield for the grand opening of Ollie's, which is in my neck of the woods here. I'm in Bastion, which is about 20 miles south. What's a good way to get out to the fans and sign some autographs?
Yeah, I'm really excited about being at Ollie's on that Wednesday. You know, it's a lot of race fans will be out. And just, you know, it's one of the fun part of my job is going out and meeting the fans and spending time with them and, you know, doing an autograph session. The way I like to do them is actually take time to say hi to people and talk to them, and hopefully we'll get a chance to do that. So, you know, that Ollie's appearance next Wednesday will be a lot of fun. I enjoy doing those things and meet a lot of neat people from all different walks of life. And, you know, saying, get out, come see me, because it's, you know, it's a grand opening, and those are really neat stores. They're really fun to go to and walk through, and I'm looking forward to being there.
And maybe I'll show up next week and come see you when I get down, when you get down here.
Go check me out.
I know they're going to give, they have a thing set up to where they're going to give autograph tickets out so everybody gets one, keeps everything even, and it's good to have you out in this neck of the woods. Of course, you're from the South Boston area, you and Brother Ward, now he's, your nephew's coming up in the sport. What words of encouragement and wisdom do you have for him as he makes his way through the ranks?
Well, you know, my thing with Jed is just reminding that, you know, why are you doing it? You know, you're doing it because you enjoy it. You're doing it because it's fun. Don't let all the pressure take the fun away from it. And, you know, his dad, the Daytona 500 champion and a multi-time cup winner. And, you know, he's got good blood in his veins. And I got to have good advice from Ward. So, you know, I got to be careful not to have too many cooks in the kitchen, but. You know, Jeb's a talented young man. He wants it really badly. He's worked hard for it. It's good to see him get an opportunity.
That's good to see. I like the way the generations of NASCAR families come up through the sport. Of course, starting, I guess, go back as early as the Petties with Lee, then Richard, then Kyle. Of course, Adam passing away on an on-track incident would have been the fourth generation of Petties, and then you have the Earnhardts, now second generation of Burtons. So it's good that the family comes up, and there's always somebody to carry on the family name as the sport progresses.
Exactly. It's part of what makes our sport neat. It really is.
And the main thing that you hear a lot of talk about is women coming up in NASCAR, and you had tweeted last year, was doing the Richmond race, about Johanna Long needs to be in some better equipment. She had a rough time at Phoenix running in the back of Sam Hornish Jr., but as far as women coming up in the sport, do you think that young ladies like her, and of course, you know, Danica gets a lot of press, so we won't talk about her right now. But
there's no reason at all that a female can't be a great race car driver. And, you know, there's just no reason. And so, you know, that doesn't mean every female is going to be a great race car driver, nor is every male going to be a great race car driver. There's very few great race car drivers. But there's no reason that a female can't be one of them. Whether we have one today that's going to be one or not, we don't know. I mean, you know, no one's really... you know, stood out just yet and said, hey, I'm as good as Jimmy Johnson, and I'm as good as Kyle Busch or Mark Martin. No, you know, I haven't seen a female driver show that yet, but that doesn't mean they can't. And you know, they receive a lot of, you know, Danica received a lot of press because she is a female. She's also received a lot of scrutiny because of what she's trying to do. You know, she's an inspiration to a lot of people. She puts it out there for everybody to see. She's trying as hard as she can. She's working hard. She's not, you know, she's not here on a free ride. She got herself signed up with a good team, which puts a lot of pressure on her. You know, so some people are critical of her and her abilities. But, you know, one thing that I think is cool is that she hasn't rushed it. You know, she doesn't get in her way yet, mostly. We all do every now and then. You know, she's working hard at it. You know, give her credit. Give her some time. You know, she hasn't, you know, shown the speed just yet that you know, she really needs to show. That doesn't mean she can't. And instead of going out and making a bunch of mistakes, she's doing it at her pace. And I give her a lot of credit for that because there's a lot of pressure on a race car driver. I don't care who you are, to have speed right now, not wait for it. And, you know, she made the decision, you know what, I'm going to take my time. I'm going to make sure I do this right and not get over my head, and I respect her for that. And it's, you know, everybody's wanted to be successful today. It's not going to happen. You know, she's not going to go out and win Vegas unless it's a, you know, crazy set of circumstances. But that doesn't mean she can't win Vegas one day. It won't be, you know, so you got to give her some time and, you know, let her do it her way.
And I think that's the key. She's taking it slow, growing herself into the sport. Team chemistry, you know, the team, and they have to gel together. They're new to, and, you know, working on pit stops and all that. You've been around the block long enough to know that it doesn't happen overnight. I mean, it's not just the driver, it's the car, it's the team. And when they work well on any given day, that's when success happens. And another thing is, like, people coming up sponsorship. The economy's been tough, and that hurts a younger driver, whether you're male or female as well. Am I right?
Yeah, there's a lot of young drivers out there that deserve a chance, and the sponsorship's been limited because of the economic issues. And, you know, there's a lot of young drivers sitting on the fence right now that have talent, but they just don't have the opportunity. And I think it's harder now than it's ever been. We were really fortunate. We were able to we have a new company coming on board as a sponsor in a tough economic time. We're really excited about that. You know, we have Quickset coming on board. It's, you know, you probably touch Quickset products every day. You know, the door locks, you know, commercial and residential door locks and door hardware. And I'm really lucky to have Quickset coming on board as the primary sponsor of the 4th of July race in Daytona. You know, for me, it's always fun to have innovative companies be on board. And also for me, as everyone knows, I've been a big advocate about safety and trying to be, you know, the best we can be as far as, you know, catch fences, race cars, those kind of things. And, of course, Quickset's all about safety. So I'm really excited about having them on board. And forging a relationship with them was something that I really, really appreciate, because we have a lot of companies sitting on the fence right now waiting for the economy to change. And here the company jumping in and jumping in with those feet, and really, really happy to have them on board.
That's pretty good to hear, especially with, you know, I have Quickset locks on my house, and I think every house I've owned previously.
I'm telling them, your product's on my door now, you know, and it's, of course, my family's a long line of contractors, so I'm very, very aware of their product, and we're excited about having them on board. But I appreciate you having me on today. I think Vegas is going to be a really exciting race this weekend. I'm really looking forward to it. I think the Gen 6 car is, you know, this is where it's going to shine. It was built for, you know, the mile and a half racetracks to put on more exciting and better races, and looking forward to seeing it in action. I mean, you know, we get an extra day of testing out there. I think that'll be good for everybody. And you know, really excited about seeing this new car in action. I think the race is going to be a lot better because of it. But at the end of the day, that's where sport has to be about. It has to be about good competitive racing, and I think you'll see it this weekend. So I appreciate you having me on your show, and hope you guys have a good day.
All right, you too, Jeff. Again, thanks for joining us, and we'll try to catch up with you next week at Ollie's.
Sounds good. Thank you.
All right, take care. Bye-bye now. Hey, Jeff Burton there. Going to be at Ollie's. Did get that extra day of practice in Las Vegas. I mean, the extra day of testing, but practice and qualifying were cut short due to the weather. Everything rained out. Field starting on owner points. Last year's owner points is because there's within the 5-race window. So last year's come into effect. So that could add a lot of practice and tweaking time. What happened was, Jeff wound up starting 20th. Didn't get a decent starting spot. Wound up finishing 26th. So maybe his day wasn't indicative of how the car ran. If your thoughts on how the car ran, give me a call, 646-649-1899. If you thought the race was exciting, boring, I kind of thought the early part of it was a little mundane, but, you know, when you go over half the race without a yellow, see, the first caution came out on lap 66. So if you're 60 straight laps of green flag running, really can't see too much on TV of what's happening at the time. Some of my friends that were out there covering the event, if they want to give a call in, maybe we'll get some of the pit reporters on that talk about what they think about the new cars, because they're in there day-to-day watching things happen. There were 22 lead changes amongst 8 drivers, and it looked to be the day that Casey Kane was pretty much his day to be in. He led a lot of laps, 114 of the 267. But, you know, Jimmy Johnson, who was off to one of the best starts he's had in a while, led some laps, too. He's led 66. Towards the end there is where it got interesting. Kyle Busch led some laps, looked like he was going to win on his home track. But and Matt Kenseth, his Joe Gibbs teammate, was also running real well, kind of creeping up towards the end there. And when all said and done, Kenseth winning the race on his 41st birthday, his first win for driving for Joe Gibbs Racing. You didn't think that Gibbs made a mistake in signing former Sprint Cup champ and multiple time, two-time Daytona 500 winner, might even been three. But, you know, Kenseth's driving style is a little different than Kyle Busch's, but Kenseth didn't manage to outlast Casey Kane. It kind of got exciting there because Kane was coming full strong. Kenseth didn't take tires on the last stop, and I think they were just measuring the gas to make sure they had enough to go the distance. I think if it came down to a green or a white checker, it was going to be interesting to see who'd run out of gas. I'm not a big fan of these gas mileage races. I think what they ought to do is maybe, you know, NASCAR has the cautions for debris that you don't see the debris, or at least we can on TV anyway. Somebody sees it. Maybe they ought to have one of them with about 30 to go and let everybody, and this way everybody will come in and pit, get some fuel and make a race of it. But as it got closer to the end there, a few cautions bunched things up a bit, especially the one around lap, around the 196 through the final 70 laps, you had a few more cautions in there. Of course, some fluid on the track, and they threw a caution at 165 for Marcus Ambrose spin, but he didn't really spin. He saved it and kept going straight. It was like a quick trigger on the yellow there. Then Bobby Labonte later on, as it got down there, and it kind of bunched the field up, and everybody was debating on whether to make that their last fuel stop and try to go the distance, because that would have been around lap 225, so put them in the window. And they were able to run on there and not have to worry about mileage so much. So Casey Kane wound up chasing Kenseth down. Kenseth asking his spotter to let him know where he's at and get the lap cars to move down low. So he was able to stay ahead, far enough ahead of Casey Kane to where he could move to the different lines and keep Kane from making a pass. So Casey Kane wound up second. Defending champ Brad Keselowski third this week. Another good run for him, with Kyle Busch wound up fourth. Had a little shuffle there. He came back from a penalty to speeding down pit road and fight his way back. Finished fourth. Carl Edwards fifth. Jimmy Johnson was sixth. Dale Earnhardt Jr. was seventh. Eighth was Martin Truex Jr. Harvick ninth. Paul Menard was tenth. Danica fans, where'd she finish? She had a rough day. Started 37, finished 33rd, five laps down. Six laps down. She must have lost one at the end there. Seemed like she was five laps down the whole way. There were five cautions for 25 laps. Average speed was going along pretty good. It kind of slowed down to below the record, wound up being 146.2. Was up around 163. Average speed, and they were commenting how that was a race record. Then, you know, once the first yellow fell, lowest amount of yellows at Vegas was two a few years ago. Points as they sit now, Jimmy Johnson holding fort. Brad Keselowski climbing to the second spot, 5 points back. Dale Jr. slipping to third, 10 points back. Denny Hamlin in fourth, there's a big jump there. It's 17-point difference between third and fourth. Carl Edwards with the win last week is keeping himself in the chase right now. He's 31 back. He needs to have a few more. He needs to get some top five runs together with some laps led, maybe a win. I'm about to get closer to that, having that year he had in 2010 where he wound up tied for the championship in points but lost to the first tiebreaker to Tony Stewart and wins. Mark Martin, sixth in the points there. Matt Kenseth with the win up to seventh. Eighth is Greg Biffle. Ninth is Clint Boyer. And 10th is Eric Amarola. So it's right now I'd like to go to my next guest. Of course, I was able to get him earlier today. Was the winner of the Sam's Town 300, Sam Hornace Jr. Of course, last year we had him on after he had that 1-2 finish in Indianapolis with Brad Keselowski. Of course, Sam finishing the race in second, looking to win at the Brickyard to be the inaugural Nationwide Series winner there, but wasn't to be. His teammate beat him. But anyway, here's my time with Sam Hornace Jr. And I'd like to welcome to Garage Talk Live my very special guest, winner of the Sam's Town 300 in Las Vegas this weekend in the Nationwide Series, none other than Sam Hornace Jr., driver of the number 12 Ford Mustang for Roger Penske. Now, Sam, welcome back to the show. I think you were on last year when you were running two series, and how's it feel just to be settling into one and know you have something you can concentrate on?
Well, it feels good. Obviously, after the win this weekend, it feels real good. Like to do well in the Cup Series too, but better than all sports at this point in time. So we're enjoying the time that we have in the Nationwide Series. It's a fun series. You get to race against a lot of the top Cup competitors, plus some young up and coming people too. So I'm having a lot of fun with it, and real happy to be leading the points now. And we've got a first, a second, a seventh in our three races so far this year. So you can't feel bad about that.
That's for sure. I noticed the car yesterday, Saturday, was the paint scheme of it was kind of like your old Indy car. And I know where you said it felt like you were driving back in the Indy days. What did it feel like having that rocket ship on you? That Mustang was fast.
that Mustang was real fast. Obviously, got to throw a big thank you to the guys at Rock Shanks for the horsepower that they gave us. Really had a good handling car. Guys bought a car right from the time when I loaded it. It was pretty good. We worked on a lot of stuff towards the end of last year to make our program better on the mile and a half. We found it, but for whatever reason, we couldn't get through it quick. We either didn't qualify very good or we'd have a bad pit stop. And we were able just to put everything together on Saturday and just be able to have a real – almost dominating day. So to be able to lead 114 on the 200 laps, I think we would have qualified better than where we started for sure. So we might have had an opportunity to lead a little bit more if it hadn't got rained out. But that Wolf car, I love that red, white, and black paint scheme. It's a real good looking car, and always enjoy having them on board. They always bring out a bunch of people for the race, and to be able to take all those people to victory lane with us was great.
And is that the sponsor's colors, or is that just something for the car? Because I know the first week you had the yellow paint scheme, and in Phoenix, I think you had a blue paint scheme. And, of course, that car, you told about nursing to a seventh place finish, that was beat up.
Yeah, that was kind of a blue car with a lot of black duct tape on it. So we started out with our light truck parts car, which is the car that we run the majority of the season, which is yellow and black, mostly yellow, and then we had the Detroit Genuine Products car at Phoenix, which they're one of the suppliers to Alliance, so that's kind of that comes along with our Alliance truck parts races. But their colors are red, white, and black, and they're a company that's into a tremendous amount of different things, from woodworking to tools to boxes to cleaning products. They've got all of your cabinetry hinges and slides and stuff like that. So there is a lot of different stuff. And there, this is the second year that they're on the car. And we're just really glad that we were able to get them away. We thought we were going to be able to do it a couple times last year, but just couldn't make it happen. So now we've got to take care of our buddies out in the Alliance Truck Park environment for this year. And, you know, I think we're going to have a lot more opportunities to win races this year.
Yeah, I think so, too. This weekend, you're coming up to Bristol, and you go from, this is like your fourth different style track in 4 weeks. Bristol known for being a tough place on equipment. How do you feel coming off the win and going to Bristol, knowing maybe you might have to save a car or stay out of trouble?
Well, we know for sure we're going to have to stay out of trouble, at least for first, you know, first 99% of the race, pretty much. So I like going to Bristol. I haven't had very much success there. I've had, except that was in the Cup Series where we were in the top five with less than 30 laps to go. And one of them, we had a radiator spring a leak, which that wasn't good, but that was, you know, just the equipment failure. We had another one where we actually had the wiring harness caught on fire a little bit. So the other thing where something was, you know, how bumpy Bristol was, you know, some things were moving around and got chafed, and then it you know, caused a shorted out part of the electrical system. So I think that, you know, I'm looking forward to going to Bristol. That's one of the things I like about stock car racing is we got so many different kinds of tracks to race on. And basically, just like you said, it seemed like throw them at us all different times of the year. You know, we went to a 2.5 mile oval to a mile oval, you know, now we're to a mile and a half, and got a half mile and a 2 mile the next couple races. I mean, it's just about anything that you can ask for. So it really keeps us on our toes as far as trying to figure out exactly where we need to be at, how to make our cars better as we get going here.
The thing of it is, you know, that is a lot of a change in anything different that you've noticed between the Challenger last year and the Mustang this year, other than the Roush Yates power?
The first time I got into this car, our first of the Mustangs that we had ready, we could tell that there was definitely a little bit of a difference in how the car handled as far as aerodynamics and whatnot. So it was a change in a good way. So we're really happy about that. A lot of people questioned Roger Penske when he made the decision to switch from Dodge to Ford. They thought that was going to be a bad decision and or couldn't understand why he would want to do such a thing. And I look at it as there was a positive for us to be able to move forward. And I think that it's shown so far, you know, a bit down the nationwide side. But if you really want to look at, you know, back to Ross Lewis, yeah, he won the championship last year, but you know, hasn't really been known to get out of the hole or to start the season off like he normally finishes. He usually is a real strong finisher, and this year he's already had 2/4 of a third place finisher. I believe 11 laps in all three races so far. So I think that, you know, Rogers, in my opinion, is probably the most skilled or best vehicle chair player in the entire world. Like, he always knows, you know, where the right seat is and when to sit down.
Yeah, I remember when he and Rusty Wallace and Don Miller formed Penske South. Their first entries were Fords, and then they switched over to the Dodges, and which kind of, I think it was kind of helped Dodge along. And I know, like, last year, if he winning the championship, the Sprint Cup championship, kind of made it, you know, why did he switch? But Dodge was looking to get out anyway, and to have one team owner fielding the cars makes it kind of a rough, you know, if you don't have a factory backing in with Ford, I think with all the other resources and information you could share, kind of help you guys. I mean, look at you in the first three races, outside of a beat-up car, in a seventh place finish at Phoenix, you probably would have finished closer to the front, not winning that one as well.
I think that we would have been in the top five for sure. But you never know what might have happened. We might have been racing with somebody for, you know, third and got taken out. So we'll take it the way that it comes. really, to be honest with you, I thought, you know, right off the bat it was going to be better. Dodge was a great supporter of Penske Racing, and it was a good relationship. But Rogers felt that in order for us to compete for championships every year, not just, you know, every couple of years or whatever, to be able to win championships every year, we needed the kind of backing and the commitment that we were going to be able to get from Ford. And I think that it's just awesome that they were able to send Dodge off, you know, with a victory in the championship. And hopefully that we'll have many more here at Penske Racing with our new friends at Ford.
Well, due to the growth of Penske. I mean, he got his first second NASCAR championship, first Sprint Cup championship last year. He had a nationwide one a couple years ago. I think Brad was driving for him then, too. So with all the IndyCar championships that he has, and I think he wants even the amount, especially that ongoing battle with Chip Ganassi in both venues.
Yeah, definitely. But, you know, if you look at Roger and what he's been able to do in the Open Wheel side of it, you know, 15 Indy 500 wins and 11 national championships as an Indy car owner, that's a pretty, pretty good number. Roger's one heck of a guy as far as just, you know, the amount of work that he puts into everything. And that was really one of the reasons why I came to over to the stock car side of it. Anyhow, when I first started, when I decided to make this leap was I wanted to see him have the same kind of success on the stock car side as what he had in the IndyCar side. And I knew all along that I might not be the guy that was going to give it to him, but if I could lead by any kind of example, I was going to help, you know, send it in that direction. And, I think I've been a much better employee over the past couple of years than maybe what I was a few years ago. And, you know, we're just trying to figure out how to make this team exactly what it should be for the kind of boss that we have.
Well, if things keep going the way they're going, who knows? You should have the nationwide title, and Brad should repeat as the Sprint Cup championship. And then they'll have a 3 in 2 years, so there's nothing wrong with that.
I think that if we can do that, that would pretty much be a nice amount of cake for everybody. You know, I wish Brad the best of luck. I think that he's a really good driver. We like a lot of similar things on the car. I think we make pretty good teammates, and I feel like I've learned some things from him, and I feel like I've helped, you know, their program out in certain ways. So it's some great chemistry that I believe that we have going on over here at Penske now. I hope that we'll be able to continue to move forward. And sometimes it just, you know, takes that relationship of getting all the people working together and on the same page is how you move your own program forward.
And you get all this piece in place and it starts growing like that. That's what happens. You know, you could look at the people who've won a lot of championships in NASCAR that they've been with their teams a number of years and had a chance to grow and gel. I think one of the things that you might have picked up from him, and I was watching Saturday, gas mileage picked up from Brad. How they it looked like it was going to come down to a mileage race, and I'm thinking, you know, I hope not.
Well, I was hoping that it wouldn't come down either. I feel like we got him beat a lot of ways usually with that. But at the end of the day, I would rather see it actually come down to a couple of restarts at the end, just the way they did, and straight from Sands. And especially when I can hold off the person that I'm restarting against, that makes it good. But, you know, back in 2009, we started working on a lot of stuff with the 77 car as far as trying to figure out how to get better fuel mileage. And a lot of that stuff was, you know, it's stuff that people have been working on, but we really focused on hard, put ourselves in position to try to win a couple Pocono races and things like that. Just couldn't get the job done. But when Brad came on board, you know, he kind of bought into that all in all. And, you know, he even brought some more of it to the table with some of the things that he does. And, you know, that's exactly what I'm saying. That's just another thing about, you know, growing as a team. So I think that that's exactly what we need to continue to do, keep our eyes and ears open, try to figure out how to raise this gear all up. I remember last year we finished 1 and 2 at the Brickyard. Unfortunately, For me, Brad won, but I was a little bit disappointed after that because I was like, man, I was so close to, you know, being the inaugural nationwide race at the Bridgeyard, you know, wanted to win that. They just come that close, and Brad says, man, don't be disappointed. He's like, don't be disappointed. I'm finished second to you any day of the week versus being, you know, I'm finishing 13th and 14th, and I feel the exact same way, but when I came into the shop right at the beginning of the year, there's this huge picture of Brad Sisson and Bricks at Indianapolis from the nationwide race. But I'm like, that's exactly why I was mad that he beat me, because I knew that, you know, no matter what happens, you can't ever go back and win the first race somewhere, again, that, because, that's just how it is. But, it came down to us racing with teammates towards the end there. Hopefully we'll be able to do that four races this year, get some 1-2s for the captain.
Yeah, I think that'll be the case. I know at Phoenix she got run into early by Johanna. She's one of the young ladies up and coming. She's got a lot of talent but just needs some experience. And hopefully, how do you see
how did I see that as it played out? Well, we didn't qualify, very good, and we didn't practice very good. So we didn't have a good starting spot, and we knew that we were going to be in for a tough day. And I wanted to kind of get around Joanna and a couple other cars early in the race, and I actually had a great start to the race. Got around three cars, including Joanna, in turns 1 and 2. And I was like, all right, that's what we need to do. Now we're just going to keep our head down, move forward. We got down into turn 3, and she hit me pretty hard, hard enough that she put a little bit of a leak in her radiator. By the time that she got around the next lap, it blew out, and I just happened to be almost right behind her when it did, and got caught up in her water, couldn't get stopped, and ended up actually hitting her after she hit the wall. That being said, the guys did a fantastic job to get the car fixed up so we could get back out there, not lose a lap, and then we just kept our heads down pretty much all day long, and we're able to get ourselves back up and finish in the 7th spot. And that's what you got to do. I mean, that's how you win championships, is by being smart. When days don't look like they're your day, you make the best out of them.
And that's one of the big things that maybe, a lot of the fans realize. That's why you get back out on the track and put a beat-up car and try to get as many spots as you can, and to be able to get that all done and stay on the lead lap, that's a testament right there.
That was a huge testament to the guys who were fixing it, but it was kind of funny because we spent like basically 3 stops getting fixed, so we were able to keep going out, keep it on the lead lap. And, I thank God that we had the peace of mind to really try to get the car fixed right, but most especially, I just feel really lucky that we didn't blow the radiator out of it, because when she wrecked the car, she did it right in front of us, and was right there front row for it, that they could have easily knocked the radiator out of that car and kept us from having any kind of a finish, let alone, being 7th. So I think that was just a good key. But we actually had the 55's transponder was stuck in our ductwork. So after we got our car fixed, NASCAR wanted us to sit there. Once we knew that we could get it fixed, without losing a lap, they wanted us to sit on pit road and cut everything back open so that we could try to get the transponder out of there. And it was kind of comical. You go through all this work to get everything taped out and fixed, and all they want you to cut it all back open again.
Yeah, I remember seeing that. They were talking about that on the telecast, and I'm like, at least they had the decency to not charge you any laps for that.
I mean, they told us, we need you to get the transponder out of there, and do whatever you can do. We'll keep you. We'll put you back on the lead lap so you prove that you can fix it and stay on the lead lap. So I mean, it's one of those deals where NASCAR's got the right idea, and I didn't know that. I didn't think about it, but if they had let us keep running or kept us running with that, or they weren't worried about it. It's just going to sit there and keep scoring the 55 car in front of me.
Yeah.
So they wouldn't know how many laps it was. When it comes up on the TV stuff, it would show that, that he was out there running. So it could have led to a bunch of confusion. So It seems that they're on the ball about things like that.
That's for sure. You know, that would have cost you a spot in the finishing order if they had that thing. And you know, it's good that they were able to pick that up early.
Yep, that's well out.
But anyway, so as far as trying to keep the points lead going into Bristol this week, what do you look forward to as far as what you're going to go out and try to qualify early? I know they have the pits are set up kind of different, where if you're pitting under green, you come in. If you're pitting on the front straightaway, you come in on the front stretch pits. So we're going to have to pit on the yellow, then you got to come in from the backside of the track. And it has a tendency to throw some of the people off. You know, even Jeff Gordon, Mark Martin had screwed that one up years ago. So is that one of the things they tell you in the driver's meeting to keep an eye on?
It's something that I've been very lucky to never have a problem with. But when you think of two guys that have as much experience and knowledge as Jeff Gordon and Mark Martin, you know that it can happen to anybody. So the big thing for me is I'd like to always pit on the backstretch, because whether you're pitting under green or under yellow, you come in the same spot basically. So there's never really any confusion as far as that goes. Outside of that, it's always, you know, just one of those things where you can try to get in the best that you can to have a good race. If you qualify on the pole, for sure you're going to take the first pit stall. But outside of that, it's, you know, it's just go out there, have a good day. Bristol's a fun racetrack. I enjoy going there. Keep looking for some success there, and we'll see what happens.
I guess that's all you can really do. I guess the main thing is stay out of trouble. I guess having 40 cars out in the track when they shorten the field up may give you a little bit more room, but not too much.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's a little room at Bristol is a lot of room sometimes we need. So I'll be glad that we only have, you know, 40 there. We'll see how we run. I think we're going to have to get there.
Well, that's good to hear. Sam, I'd like to thank you again for coming on. I hope you didn't mind joining us. We'll hope to have you back in the future, maybe online sometime.
And, all right. Well, thanks a lot for having me on. I appreciate it.
And good luck this coming weekend.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye now.
Well, there you go, everybody. I hope you enjoyed those interviews that Vince did Monday night. He had some great guests on. I hope you'll tune in this Monday night for him. You can always check out the Garage Talk Live Facebook page. She'll have everything going on with what he has scheduled there on Monday nights. I've been away. I've got some duties now. I stepped up and took up some additional responsibilities at the firehouse. So it has taken me away on Monday nights and made our life even more crazy, if that was even possible, with the schedule that I run. But now, be sure you tune in and support all of our shows Monday night. Vince is on from 8 o'clock till 10 o'clock. We have Tuesday nights, the Lowdown and Dirty Crews on. This week, they're going to be talking to a couple of the different tracks that are getting ready to open up this week in the area. We're going to have Tim Long on from Big Diamond and a couple other of the promoters. I apologize. I forgot him off the top of my head right now, and Scott's not there to give me the booster. But there's lots going on. We're always out and about. And starting March 30th, we're going to be doing our shows every weekend. You can find me at Grandview Speedway. Saturday, March 30th, is a free-to-public open practice session. Activities on the track get away under noon. But I will be getting there earlier on in the day, so you can always find me wandering the grounds. And especially this year, you're going to find me wandering the grounds pre-race. We're going to be having autograph sessions going on. We're going to be having some pre-race VIP hospitality tours for our track sponsors of the evening to thank them for their support of auto racing. We're going to have various giveaways and promotions and things like that going on every week at the track. So be sure you're tuned in to any of our shows, the Monday night show with Vince, Tuesday night with Brian Whippy and Scott, or Thursday nights here with me and the girls, because you never know what's going to be going on. And make sure you join the Grandview Facebook page. make sure it's a big thing you join their official Facebook page. Social media is one of the fastest growing forms of communication in the world. It's even starting to override people calling each other. Why do you want to call when you can just message and everything like that, texting and Twittering and Facebook? So, you know, Grandview's on board this year. They're going to be growing their fan base on Facebook, so make sure you check that out. But until then, I'm going to sign off from now. I'm going to wish everybody a great week. Have a wonderful St. Paddy's Day. Don't drink too much. And if you do, please make sure you call and get a ride home. Please be safe. We don't want anybody out there on the roads that's had a few too many. There's nothing wrong with calling for a ride. So until next week, have a great week, great weekend, and we'll see y'all next week when the checker flag flies.